Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
February the 26th, and this is Shmuel, and we are in Parakhaf Hey, chapter 25. So we're going to, as we mentioned at the end of the last shiur, we're going to digress here, at least it's going to appear like a digression, from the whole description of Shaul chasing David, because Shaul has had an epiphany that David is going to become king. And now we're going to have an entire parak devoted to David and his episode with Naval. Naval is the husband of Abigail, and eventually Abigail will become David's wife. So this is going to be about that. Now, in stark contrast to Shaul, Shaul is from the tribe of Binyamin, and David is from the tribe of Yehuda. Naval is from the tribe of Yehuda. Naval is going to be a distant cousin of David, as we will see. The parak begins, Vayamas Shmuel, and Shmuel died. Vayikbitzu Kol Yisrael, all the Jews gathered, Vayisbidu lo, and they eulogized him, Vayikberuhu Beveso Barama, and they buried him in his home in Ramah. Vayakam David, and David got up, Vayemid El Midbar Paran. And he went down to Midbar Paran, to the wilderness of Paran. Now, the introduction to this parak with the death of Shmuel is very significant. We're going to have to try to understand what does the death of Shmuel have to do with what we're going to learn right now. Moreover, more directly, is why does David switch places based on Shmuel's death? With Shmuel's death, David gets up and he goes to the Midbar Paran, goes to the wilderness of Paran. Why? What is it with Shmuel's death that makes David move? Now we launch into a whole story. V'ish b'ma'on, there was a man in Ma'on, u'ma'aseu v'karmel, and his actions, which means his wealth, his flock, was in Karmel. V'ish gadol ma'od, the man was very great, meaning very wealthy. V'lo tzon shloshes alafim, he had 3,000 sheep. The elef izim, and 1,000 goats. V'yihi b'gzozes tzono v'karmel, and it was when he sheared his sheep in Carmel. He was, you know, that's the story is going to be with him shearing his sheep in Carmel. V'shem ha'ish Naval, his name was Naval. V'shem ishto Abigail, the name of his wife was Abigail. So ha'isha tovas sechel, the woman was a very intelligent woman. V'fas tovar, also beautiful. V'ha'ish kashe, the man was difficult. V'ram ma'alolim, and he was evil of actions. He had evil actions. Vuhu Chalivi, and he was a descendant of Kalev. That's the famous Kalev that you know of as one of the spies with Yehoshua who spoke positively about Eretz Yisrael. So the man has a great wife. The man has great ancestry, but he himself is difficult and of evil or poor actions. Vayishma David b'midbar, and David heard while he was in the wilderness, ki gozeis Naval es tzona, that Naval was shearing his sheep. Vayishlach David asara na'arem, David sent 10 lads. Vayomer David la na'arem, David said to the lads, alu Carmela, go up to Carmel, uvasem el Naval, come to Naval, ushaltem lo vishmi, and ask him in my name, l'shalom, is for peace. Vamartem, you shall say, kol achai, so it should be for life. V'atah shalom, and you, meaning Naval, you should have peace. U'v'eskah shalom, there should be peace to your house. V'chol ha'shalachah shalom, there should be peace to everything that you have. V'atah shamati, now I have heard, meaning I, David, have heard, ki gozes imlach, that you are, they're shearing your sheep for you. And it was their way that they would make a great celebration when they would shear the sheep. Atah now haroim ha'shalachah hayu imanu, the shepherds that you had were with us. Lo hechlamnum, we did not shame them. V'lunifgad lahem amuma, nothing was lost of theirs. Kol yomei osam b'Carmel, all the times they were in Carmel. When they were in Carmel, we were there as well, me and my men, and we took care of your sheep, and we helped out your shepherds. Sha'alas na'orecha, ask your lads, v'yagidu lach, they're going to tell you. V'yimtzu ha'ne'orem chen be'enecha, and the lads should find favor in your eyes. Ka'al yom tov banu, for we have come for a yom tov. It's a holiday for you, because you're shearing your sheep. T'na, give please, or give now, esa she'timtza yadcha la'avodecha, whatever your hand finds for your servant, u'levincha, and to your son, le'david, to David. So, David is asking Naval for help. Say, listen, you know, when your sheep and your flock was up in the Carmel, my people and I, we helped take care of those sheep. We were good to you. And now we're asking that you're celebrating the shearing of your sheep, that you provide something for us. Please help us out. David speaks in a very humble way. He says, for your servant, meaning David, and he even says, for your son, for David, because they are related. Vayavo nare David, so the lads of David came, vayadabu el Naval, and they spoke to Naval, kachol advarim ha'edla b'shem David, like all these words in the name of David, vayanuchu, and they finished speaking. Vayanuchu also means, and they rested. They were very worn out from the journey to Naval, and they didn't want to rest until they delivered their message, which they did, but then they needed to rest because they were exhausted. Vayan Naval es Abdei David Vayomer. So Naval answered the servant of David, and he said, Mi David, who is David? Umi ben Yishai, who is the son of Yishai? Hayom rabu avadim hamispartzim ish mipnei Adonav. Today, there are many slaves who break free from before their masters. Meaning, he's speaking very derogatorily about David, to say that he is like a slave who's breaking forth away from his master. I should take my bread and my water, and my meat that I slaughtered. I should that I slaughtered for my sheep shearers. And I should give it to men. That I don't know where they're from. I should go give my things away to people of the likes of you. Vayavchu nare David ledarkam. The lads of David turned on their way. Vayashuvu, and they returned. Vayavo, and they came. Vayagidu lo, and they told to him, to David, kechol advarim o'ele, all these things. Vayomer David la'anoshav. David said to his men, chigru ish es charbo. Each man should belt their swords, which means go put on your swords. Vayacharu ish eskarbo. So each man put on their swords. Vayachar gam David eskarbo. David also put on his sword. Vayalu achrei David. They all went up after David. Ke'arba meos ish, like 400 men. Umasayim yashuvah vakelem, and 200 remained to protect the supply lines, to protect the utensils. David's group has gone up by 100. He started off with 400. We saw later he had 500. Now we see he has 600. And they are going to kill Naval for this insult. I'm debating where to stop and catch up a little bit in some of the issues that are going on. Okay, let's go a little further. To Abigail, the wife of Naval, one of the lads from those lads that were there said to her, Hine shalach David malachim mehamidbar levarech es Adonenu. David sent messengers from the wilderness to bless our master. Vayat bohem, and he to be laat. That verb means to like chase away, like if you chase away a fly, you shoo it away, and he shooed them away. V'anashim tovim lanu me'od, but those men were very good to us. V'lo hachlamnu, they didn't shame us. V'lo fakadnu ma'uma, we didn't lose anything with them. Kol yemei hishalachnu itam, all the days that we went with them. Biosinu basada, when we were in the field. Chol mahayu aleinu, they were like a wall to us. Gam laila, gam yolam, also night, also during the day. Kol yemei hayosinu imam roi matzon, all the time that we were with them, shepherding the sheep. They took care of us. They protected us. V'ata, now, di'i uri'i mata'asi, you should know and you should see what you should do. For the evil has now been complete against our master and against his whole house. And he is a man who has thrown off the yoke. midaber elav from speaking to him. Which means we can't go talk to him. He's not going to listen to us. He's going to admonish us if we try to speak to him. But things are in bad shape because here he has brushed away David's men after David's men took such good care of us, and now we're in big trouble because what's going to happen now? They were clearly afraid of David and his men. Vatemaher Abigail went quickly. Vatikach masayim lechem, and she took 200 loaves of bread. Ushnaim nivla yayin, and 2 barrels of wine. Vechamesh son asuyos, and 5 sheep that were asuyos, means that they were either they were stuffed or that they were complete, meaning it was prepared to eat. Vechamesh seim kali, and 5 sa'a as a measurement of roasted grain. Umeat simukim, and 100, we would call them raisins, dried grapes. They're not talking about these scrawny little things. Right? Like 100 raisins is like one of those little things. No, we're talking about big things.
Clusters of.
Okay, that's better. Umasim dveilim, and 200 they're cakes of dried figs. Vatasem ala chamarim, and she put them on the donkeys. Vatomer lin areha, and she told to her lads, Ivru lefanai, go in front of me. Hinani acharechem ba'a, I am coming behind you. Uli isha naval lo higida, to her husband naval, she did not tell. V'yayahir ocheves ala chamar, she was riding on the donkey. V'yorevis b'seser har, and going down the hidden part of the mountain. V'nei David v'anashav yardim likrasa, and David and his men were coming down to meet her. There were 2 mountains of the valley in between. They were each coming down the side of the mountain. And they met in the valley. Vatifko shosam, and she met them. V'David omar, David had said, Ach la'sheker shamarti es kol asher lozeh b'amidbar. There was only for, sheker of course means a lie, but it means for no purpose did I guard all this man had in the wilderness. Nothing was lost from him. He has returned to me evil in place of my good. So Hashem should do to all the enemies of David, and so should he do more. If I'll leave over from all this man has by the light of the morning, Mashtin Bakir can mean one of 2 things. It either means any person. No person will be left alive, because the word mashtin could mean meshis, and vikir could mean kiros libo. The Chazal say it means anybody who has thoughts inside of them, people who think intelligently. It either means that, or it means mashtin vikir, which literally means to urinate against the wall, which would refer to a dog. It means even the dogs, I'm going to destroy everything in this man, even his animals I'm going to kill. So that was what David was on his way to do. He was on his way to absolutely decimate Naval and everything he had. Abigail, meanwhile, is coming from the other direction. They meet in the valley, and her purpose is to stop David from doing what he's about to do. Okay, so let's pause here. And at this juncture, you may know the story already, but what's going to happen is that Abigail is going to stop David from doing what he's about to do. She is going to stop him. The story will move on from there. Now, as we started in our introduction with the first pasuk, the first verse in this parak, it starts with Shmuel's death, and David moves locations. With that, we have to understand why Shmuel's death is so significant that David would switch places, and why is that the introduction to this parak? We already mentioned that as a question. We have to understand as well, what was the big deal with shearing the sheep? Why does shearing the sheep warrant a Yom Tov, as David puts it, a holiday, that not only is it a holiday, but it's such a big holiday that David expects that Nabal's going to share with everybody else that he has any goodwill towards, because people who did him favors, he's going to do a favor back. Now, you could just say, because shearing the sheep is like harvesting the crop. If there's a lot of sheep, so you got a lot of wool, you sell in the market, you got a lot of money. It could be, but we're going to show something a little bit more than that. Moreover, we also have to understand
why does Nabal not want to give to David? I mean, Nabal was, it says he was an evil man. Oh, he did evil things, but wouldn't you, isn't it just simply the pragmatic thing to do? Here, someone is taking care of your sheep. Don't you want to keep that relationship going? Isn't that good for you? If, strictly from a business perspective. Forget, you know, not being nice. Just from a business perspective, you would think it's in Nabal's best interest to be to give something to David in order to keep up this great free protection that he got and that he could get next season as well. So why does Nabal reject David so and so derisively, like, you know, just dismissing him like that? We have to understand, if Abigail is such a great woman, here she is praised both for her intelligence and for her physical appearance, and we're going to see that she's a very wise woman, as we'll see as we go along. What is she doing married to this evil man? We know nothing about Nabal except the Torah tells us. Nabi tells us he was a difficult person of bad actions. So what happened over here? Who made this shidduch?
Yes.
Right? Like, what? Where did that come from? So we have to understand that. And we also have to understand, why does David react so negatively? Okay, so he was rebuffed. All right. I mean, so it's not a nice thing, but now David is going to respond by killing Nabal?
That seems a bit extreme.
Seems somewhat extreme. And everything he owns, we're just going to wipe him out. All right, men? It's this certainly seems like David feels like his ego has been touched. Doesn't that seem like a little bit extreme? Like, you know, until now our picture of David has been that he's out in the hills in hiding from Shaul, and his midos are exemplary. He's not going to kill Shaul. He's not stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. That's not what he's doing. He's just trying to survive long enough for Hashem to do whatever he's going to do in order to switch the malucha, to switch the kingship from Shaul to David. And David's not willing to push the envelope any further than Hashem pushes it. And here, all of a sudden, we have David reacting in a very aggressive way to what? To have been rebuffed. Okay, I mean, you know, where is this coming from, such a powerful reaction?
Next question. In Carmel, because we know that the Navi was up there, is that, like when he says his possessions were in Carmel, is that spiritual or physical?
It seems like it was physical, but Shmuel wasn't there. He was in Ramah. I mean, Shmuel was all over the place, really.
Right, but don't we have like a lot of stuff going on with Navi's in Carmel?
Yeah, Eliyahu is the real, right. We had that. We also had with the.
But your son, it has nothing.
No. It's significant. It's significant. Okay. It's definitely significant. Yep. No question about it. Okay. Now there are more questions, but this I think already gives us enough framework to build the picture of what's happening over here. Abigail comes to stop David, and she's going to stop David successfully. When Abigail stops David, as we'll see, her argument is not that Nabal is a great man. She readily admits that Nabal's a scoundrel. But she stops David anyway from doing what he's about to do. Let's read a little further to see how she stops him. Chav Gimel 23. Vatir Abigail is David. Abigail saw David. Vatimaher, and she was quick. Vatirid me'al ha'chamor, she got off of the donkey. Vatipol la'ape David al panel, she fell to the face of David on her face. Vatishtaku aretz, and she bowed to the ground. Vatipol la'al raglav, she fell on his feet, which means in front of him. Vatomer, and she said, Bi ani adoni avon, my master, the sin is in me. Don't blame him, blame me. Now Rashi explains she doesn't really mean this. She was only doing this to begin the conversation so that David will pay attention to what she has to say. Because right now David was in a state where he was going to push aside anything that got in his way and go kill Nabal. So she said this in order to catch his attention. Let my let your servant please speak in your ears, Ushma, and listen, Esteve Amasecha, the words of your maidservant. Do not let my master place his heart on this man of no yoke, this Belial who throws off the yoke, this man like this, that's a pejorative. Al Naval on Naval. Ki Chishmo Kenhu. His name, that's who he is. Naval means disgusting. That's what Naval means. Yeah, he's disgusting. Naval Shmo, Naval is his name. Unevala Imo. And despicableness is with him. Vani Amaska, I, your maidservant, Lo Ra'isi Es Nare Adoni, I did not see the lads of my master, Asher Shalach, that you sent. In other words, had I seen them, I would have given them food. I would have helped, but I didn't know what happened. Ve'ata Adoni, and now my master, Chai Hashem Echei Nafshecha, I swear by Hashem and by your life, Hashem Noacha Hashem Yibo V'damim, that Hashem has kept you from coming to blood, meaning Hashem has sent me to stop you from murder. V'hoshea Yad Chalach, and has helped your hand for you. V'ata Yu Chenaval Oivecha, now all your enemies should be like Naval. V'avavakshim El Adoni Ra, anybody who's trying to do evil to my master. Abigail was saying, with prophecy, that she knew that Hashem was going to kill Naval. David shouldn't do it, but rather Hashem would do it. And she was saying to David, let all your enemies be like Naval. This blessing, which means this present, Asher Hevi Shivchot Al Adoni, that my master, that your my servant, your that your maidservant has brought to my master, V'nidal Anarim, that are given to the lads, Hamisalchim Beragli Adoni, that are going at the feet of my master. Sona Lefesha Amasecha, please forgive the sin of your maidservant, Ki Asoya Asa Hashem Adoni Bayis Neman, Hashem will make for my master a worthy house. Ki milchamos Hashem Adoni milcham, because Hashem fights the wars of Hashem. V'ra lo simatzei v'chav miyamecha, and no evil has been found in you in all your days. V'yakam adam lirad v'cha, and a man has gotten up to chase you, ulevakesh asafshecha, and to seek your soul. V'aysa nefesh Adoni tzura b'tzor hakayim, and then the soul of my master should be bound up in the bound of life. That's a famous quote. We say it's often said at funerals. Eis Hashem Elokecha, with Hashem, your God. Veis nefesh oivecha, and the soul of your enemies, yekal ena b'soch kaf ha-kala, they should be
stone from a slingshot.
What is that?
Stone from a slingshot.
In the kaf ha-kala is the pocket of the slingshot. It's a slingshot where the Rashi explains you have the material of the slingshot, and in the very bottom of it, which is where the stone sits, there's like a leather part to it. That's where the stone goes in, and then it shoots from there. So the souls of your enemies should be slung from the slingshot, from that spot of the slingshot.
The hollow of the slingshot.
Okay. Okay. We'll have to discuss that separately, what that means. When Hashem does to my master all the good that he's spoken on you, he's made you a king on the Jews. This should not be for you as a sin, and a stumbling block of the heart, for my master, and to spill blood for no reason. This should not be something which gets in your way, that people will say that you're a murderer. And to save my master with this. And Hashem will do good for my master. And you should remember your maidservant. Okay, so here she is alluding to that when Hashem takes care of your enemies for you, don't forget me. And David will not. David is going to marry her eventually. Okay, so Abigail comes to stop David. Now, I could keep on reading. The problem is, it's a long parak, and we're not going to get a chance to discuss any of this. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to pause, I'm going to narrate to you quickly what's going to happen, so you know, but then go back to answer some of these questions that we started with, and next time we'll have to continue with the story. She stops David, but Hashem is going to kill Naval. Naval will be killed, and then David will marry Abigail. So, what exactly is going on with the whole story here? Let's first talk about the death of Shmuel. You know that in the beginning, there was Shmuel. Shmuel was in charge. Shmuel was the head, chief Navi. I don't know if you would call him a shofet or not, but he was in charge. After Eli came Shmuel. During Shmuel's lifetime, an unprecedented thing happened, which is?
They asked for a king.
Well, they asked for a king, but in terms of leadership of the Jewish people, an unprecedented thing happened. During the lifetime and the viability of the leader, power was given to somebody else. Not because Shmuel became unable to lead, not because he died, not because he sinned. But power was given to somebody else. That was a major shift that never happened before. That never happened before. Abraham was always in charge till he died. Then Yitzchak, then Yaakov. Of course, it's always going to be like that, the father, the son, etc. But even once you get to the nationhood, who's in charge? Moshe. When does Yehoshua succeed Moshe?
After Moshe.
When Moshe dies. When do the Zekanim succeed Yehoshua? When Yehoshua dies. Each shofet is in charge until they die. And then the next shofet takes over. When does Shmuel succeed Eli? When Eli dies. But Shmuel is told to give up his position for Shaul. So it doesn't... Shmuel now is no longer in charge. This position is now occupied by Shaul. Where is Shmuel?
Still around.
Okay. Shaul is in charge. He's on top of the nation. Everything comes from Shaul. He's in charge. Where's Shmuel? Would you put Shmuel, if you're going to box him in somewhere, would you put him down here?
No.
Somewhere in the rank and file?
No, he's not here.
Where do you put him? Would you put him as second in command?
Like I said,
somewhere
category.
Okay, so Shmuel is somewhere over here. Shmuel, I wouldn't put him as a subject of Shaul. It's hard to put him there. He's kind of like a separate entity, almost like a separate nation. He's there. He's, to be sure, he's there. And of course, he does need to listen to Shaul in theory. If Shaul would give him a direct order, he would have to listen. But Shmuel is not just a chief advisor. It's more than that. A chief advisor is still a subject. He's still beneath the king. I don't think any of us would box Shmuel beneath Shaul. He's somewhere off to the side. He doesn't really fit somewhere. In Shaul's time as king, before David comes on the scene, the people's loyalty, of course, is to Shaul. But prior to Shaul, they were loyal to Shmuel. So now that Shaul is king, and Shaul has primary, is the leader, is there no loyalty to Shmuel anymore? Take, if you were a person who had been a subject of Shmuel's, of course he's not a real subject because he's not the king, but you were absolutely loyal to Shmuel. Whatever Shmuel says, you're going to do. Now Shmuel says, okay, everybody wants you to know, Shaul is the king, he's in charge, you have to have complete loyalty to Shaul. Okay? Fine. And if Shmuel would tell you to do something, you're not going to listen anymore? We're still going to have loyalty to Shmuel. So what I'm pointing out to you is that although Shaul is for sure the king, and the people are loyal to Shaul, and we'll call it the main loyalty of the people is to Shaul, but there's definitely some loyalty as well to Shmuel. Now, there never was a conflict. We never saw anywhere a conflict between loyalty to Shaul and loyalty to Shmuel. I never found that.
What about when Shmuel took him to task about the animals, that he didn't kill of a Amalek?
So Shmuel took Shaul to task, but we don't find the people.
But the people knew that Shmuel could yes. take Shaul to task.
Yes, but we don't find the people needing to choose between Shaul and Shmuel. We don't find that.
They're there.
What's that?
They were both there.
They're both there. But there certainly is... If I were to ask you, does Shmuel have a power base? If he wanted to exercise power, if Shmuel would have gotten up and said, okay, people, Shaul, he's done a sin. Everybody come listen to me. That would have caused quite a problem for the people. Because Shmuel definitely commands authority. There's certainly, had he wanted to mount a civil war, Shmuel could have done it. Like, I don't know, more people would have followed Shaul, more people would have followed Shmuel. He would not, of course, Shmuel's not going to do that because that would have been a big avera. But from a totally political perspective, which is not our normal way of looking at things, Shmuel definitely has a power base, even though he doesn't exercise it. Okay. David comes on the scene. Shaul sins, David comes on the scene. Now, we have been learning about David's slow progression in gaining a power base. He starts as a general of Shaul's, he becomes a son-in-law of Shaul's. It's clearly second a subject of Shaul. But as now he's more and more on the run, we've been understanding that slowly but surely David is assuming more and more of a kingly type role. Slowly but surely. He asks the Urim V'Tumim, which only a king is supposed to do. He saves the people of Keilah, which, we, as mentioned, that was a royal thing to do. Right? He's slowly but surely becoming more and more of a power base as well. It's not that strong, but there is a little bit of a power base for David. We know that the progression over here is going to be that David is on his way up, and Shaul is on his way down. Then we know that's what's happening.
Shaul is on his way out.
Well, okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But that's what's happening over here. At the end of the last paragraph, last chapter, we finally had Shaul admitting for the first time, David, I know you're going to be king. I know it. When that happens, don't kill off my offspring. But it's happening. Slowly but surely it's happening. So David is slowly but surely on the rise. Shaul is slowly but surely on the decline. David is not willing to kill Shaul, even though he could have done it. Because he says he is the Mashiach Hashem. And I don't care that I am also a Mashiach Hashem. I was anointed as well, says David. But it is not my job to kill Shaul. That is Hashem's job. If he wants to kill him, he will kill him. It is not my job. I was not told to do it. And you're not allowed to kill the Mashiach Hashem. Shaul is still the king. I may also be a king. I may be slowly but surely on the rise. I may even be able to create kind of like this small enclave of people who are kind of outside of society, not really under Shaul's control. We're off in the hills somewhere. We're kind of building our own little country over there in the hills. But it's by no means are we seeking at this time to cause a civil war. That's not David's aim. David is not out to cause a civil war. That's not his point. David is not out to make some sort of military coup and get rid of Shaul. That is not what David intends to do. His intention is to stay out of the way until Hashem takes care of Shaul. But he does have a power base. Now, Shmuel dies. What happens to his power base? Where does that go?
Shifts over.
Has to shift over. It can't just be missing. If there was a power base, and the person who occupied it is no longer there, and there is no successor, the people who had either loyalty to Shmuel, or dual loyalty between Shaul and Shmuel, or dual loyalty between David and Shmuel. But where does that power base go? Well, you only have two choices. Either it's going to go to Shaul, or it's going to go to David, or it's going to be split amongst them. If Shaul's on his way down and David's on his way up, where would Hashem want this power base to go?
To David.
With Shmuel's death, I don't know how it shook out politically. I don't know how in fact what happened. I don't know how people started talking around the dinner table. But when Shmuel dies, Hashem orchestrates that David gets a bump. David is now bumped suddenly to a higher level of talent. He's not still not equal to Shaul. He's still not equal to Shaul, but all of a sudden, he is now, his star rises faster. With Shmuel's death, there is now a significant shift of power that had been in Shmuel's camp, but not exercised, into David's camp, which also is not really being exercised. But David, all of a sudden, is recognized much more than he was before as king. Where does this find expression? I mean, still, David's not changing his perspective. He's not going to cause a civil war. He is not going to do a military coup. He is not going to push the envelope. He is going to sit tight and wait. So it doesn't change what he does in that respect. But it does mean that as David's star rises higher and higher, the expectation that he be recognized as a royal figure increases. Whereas when David was first anointed quietly amongst his brothers and no one knew about it, if David would have given someone a direct order and the person would have said, "Who are you? I'm not doing that." Would that have been a morid b'malchus? Would that have been a rebellious person who deserves to be killed for it? I would think not. How is he? First of all, is he supposed to know? Second of all, I mean, nothing happened yet. But as David is becoming more and more clearly the Mashiach Hashem, to say something in a rebellious manner to David is getting closer to like you're rebelling against the king himself. Now, it's not quite. He's still not on the level of Shaul. Shaul is still higher. I deliberately made that a little bit lower. Shaul is still higher. And if you rebel against Shaul, that's it. You're dead. He's still the king. With David, it's not so clear. But it does make a difference for how Nabal behaves. Now,
the people then we're supposed to know at the point
was,
that
was becoming more and more known
that he would be king.
It was Shaul himself admitted it. It's becoming more known. I don't think it was all over yet, but it was getting around. There was a buzz. It was getting around. Huh?
But does Nabal know?
Nabal for sure knows.
Even though he said, "Who is this David? Who is this Yishai?"
So here's the thing. What does Nabal say or do? Now, if Nabal would have said, "I'm not helping you. I'm loyal to Shaul. I'm loyal to Shaul. I'm not helping you." I believe that that would not have been a sin. There would have been nothing wrong with that. Any subject of Shaul, any rank and file Jew in the country, had the right to say, "I am a subject of Shaul, I'm loyal to Shaul, and David, I'm not helping you. You're the king is working against you, you're working against me, I don't know who's right, who's wrong, I'm not getting involved in this. I'm a loyal subject of Shaul's." I don't think anybody would have had any problem with Nabal's behavior had that been the source of his rejection of David's men. Perhaps there still would have been an element of lack of hakara satov, lack of gratitude. Okay, but that's not a reason to get killed. Unfortunately, we all have failed in that area at times, and we don't get killed for it, thank God. So that's not a reason to kill somebody. But that was not what Nabal said. Our sages teach us, Chazal say, when Nabal said, "Who is David and who is Ben Yishai?" Nabal said, "Who's David? Oh, him? The one who comes from a Moabite? From a Moabia? That's who you want me to send things to? This slave who breaks forth from his master? That's who you want me to send?" Nabal was attacking David's right to be king. Nabal was attacking David's legitimacy. He wasn't pledging allegiance to Shaul, he was attacking David's legitimacy. That is a merida b'malchus. That is a rebellion. Now, perhaps it's not the same thing as a rebellion after David became king across the country, but as David's star rises, that's pretty bad. Because Nabal is questioning David's entire right to assume the throne, just as Doeg has done. Mm-hmm. Why does Nabal do this? After all, Nabal is a relative of David. He comes from Kalev. Why would he do this? And what I will, Mirat Hashem, show you is, well, I guess we're going to do this, I'll do this part next week, hopefully, is that because Nabal comes from Kalev, Kalev is also from Yehuda, and Nabal believes that David is not the rightful king, but rather
I am.
Nabal.
Really?
Yeah. Nabal sees himself as the person who should be assuming the throne, not David. This was an out-and-out challenge to David. This was not some person who doesn't get it and it's not fair and, you know, I was just being loyal to Shaul. That's not what's going on over here. Nabal is a clear challenger to David's legitimacy and David's right to take the throne. I'm going to show you, Mirat Hashem, I just don't have prepared right now the lineage. When I gave a shiur on about, of all things, Tzom Gedalia, we discussed this. Tzom Gedalia actually ties in with this whole discussion. Because the man who murdered Gedalia also was in the same type of thing. We're going to show that there were actually three separate lines in the family that relates to David, and Nabal comes from one, and Yishmael ben Nesanya, who murdered Gedalia, comes from another, and David comes from another one. We'll show this, Mitzvah Hashem. This will be Mitzvah Hashem next time. This is where Nabal is coming from. This is why Abigail is married to Nabal. Abigail was a woman worthy of being married to
the king.
Ultimately, she is going to marry the king. Not because David doesn't seek to marry Abigail just because she did a nice thing. If she's not worthy to be married to a king, just because she did a nice thing, you don't marry her. He marries her because David recognizes in her that she belongs married to a king. She is royal material. That's why she was married to Nabal. Because Nabal, I don't know when he became a bad person. I have to believe that when Abigail married Nabal, at that time, she saw in him the potential of royalty. In fact, Nabal had the potential to be not the king himself, because that has to come from David, but he had the potential to certainly play a very significant role within the kingship of David, to be a very significant supporting player within the kingship of David. And Abigail was meant to be the wife of that person. That's who she was meant to be. Nabal failed, whether it was out of haughtiness, whether it was out of jealousy, I don't know, it doesn't tell us. But somehow he fell down on the job. He didn't make it. But Abigail never lost it. She always remained a person of royal, not lineage, but royal bearing, where she could have been married to, if not the king, the king's chief advisor, something like that. When Nabal fails, David then marries Abigail, and I want to draw an analogy over here, which those of you who attend Sunday night will appreciate, and I don't mean to make this an exact analogy, but just as originally the plan had been that Yaakov marries Rachel and Esav marries Leah, and Yaakov and Rachel form the primary part of Klal Yisrael, and Esav and Leah form the supporting immediate circle around the main part of Klal Yisrael in the supporting role. Esav falls down on the job, Yaakov marries Leah, and now Yaakov and Rachel, Yaakov and Leah, are doing both roles. Yaakov has a Klal Yisrael that has to do both roles. Both that central part and the supporting part are both being done by Yaakov. One through Rachel, one through Leah. I'm saying that a similar thing is happening over here. where there should have been David and whatever his primary wife would be. We'll talk about that separately because he has other wives. He is married to Michal right now. And Naval, married to Abigail, would form an immediate supportive circle around David. Naval fails, but Abigail is still worthy. David marries Abigail, and thereby keeping that strength within the royal family. That's what's happening in this episode. Now, when Naval rejects David, and it is a clear act of rebellion, a slap in the face, David says, I'm going to kill him. Is this just David's ego has been touched, so he's reacting like this? Not at all. We already have enough episodes of David that we know he doesn't react like that. David is far, far above those types of reactions that we are so susceptible to. David's reaction is because he believes this man is a Marid B'Malchus. I want you to look very carefully. Our sages tell us, Chazal say, that in Pasuk Yigimel, verse 13, it says, David told his men, what is this, gird your swords? Gird your swords. And they girded their swords. And he also girded his sword. Chazal say, this wasn't just putting on a sword. They actually held court. They sat and they judged Naval. Is he chayav misa? Does he deserve capital punishment or not? And they went through the sugya. They went through the learning. They went through the discussion, the deliberation about it, based on the halacha, and they came out that yes, he is chayav misa. He's liable for death. And that's why it says they girded their sword first and then David, because David was the greatest Talmud Chacham. He was the greatest sage. And therefore, he had to go last. Because the rule is that when you judge a capital crime, we learned this also on Sunday night, the greater Talmidei Chacham, the greater sages have to vote later. Because we don't want their opinion influencing everybody else. So that's why David is the last one to vote. Because David was the greatest of all the Talmidei Chachamim, and it would have influenced other people. And therefore, they paskined, they ruled, that Naval is Chayav Misa, that Naval is liable for death. They were not wrong. They were correct. He was liable for death. Hashem is going to agree with them and strike Naval down. The only question is, he may be liable for death. Who should carry it out? David held that he should. Abigail convinced him, let Hashem do it. Now, we still have to understand that. Because until now, David has been happy to say, I'm not doing it, Hashem's going to do it. When it comes to Shaul, that's David's position. So we have to understand why over here does David all of a sudden feel that it's his job to carry this out and not leave it up to Hashem. So that's something which needs to be discussed.
Why is he deserving of death?
Because
of the fact that David is the king, although not the almost king.
Because he's rebelling. He's rebelling.
Okay, so otherwise he wouldn't be deserving of death.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
Do people normally have 200 loaves of bread hanging around?
Really,
so here,
but even if you're rich, you want stuff to go bad. I can understand, like, the wine would stay for a long time, or, you know, the grain.
He was throwing a party. Well, Steve, he had a very long party going on over here.
Well, he still has the party. So what? I mean, 200 could have been the whole party because
No, there's a big party.
He still has a party.
I'm saying there's a big party going on. Now let's talk about
all of it right now.
Let's talk about this party. Let's talk about this party. So he's making a big party, and David comes to ask. So we could just say that the reason David came to ask is because there's a big party, and he's making a big party because there's money, because they just sheared the sheep.
Aren't you supposed to give this when Shmuel comes and you're having a party or two?
Not, not if you feel that the person coming in the door is a traitor. Yeah, is a, well, not just a traitor. Is a, is a, yeah, he's an illegitimate person who's not supposed to, who's trying to make himself into king, and you know, he doesn't want to support that. He's enabling. He doesn't want to do that. Why is there a big party? So, let's go back to the first episode in the Chumash that is recorded about shearing sheep. Who knows where the first episode of shearing sheep is recorded in the Torah?
Kind of.
It's not about shearing. There is sheep there, but not shearing the sheep.
I think of Lavan, there must probably be before that.
Moshe.
With Lavan there is. Yeah. With Lavan there is. You're correct. I'm wrong. That's the first episode.
Oh, okay.
Good. Very good. The second episode of shearing sheep. Good.
Isn't it with Moshe?
Before that.
Yaakov before he leaves.
That's Lavan.
Oh, that's Lavan.
That's Lavan. Yeah, no, she's right. Right, that's about Lavan. Right. When Yehuda's wife...
Well, he goes to Tamar, right?
Right. So, well, first Yehuda finds a wife. He finds Tamar for his first son. His first son dies. Second son dies. Then he tells Tamar to wait. Then Yehuda's wife dies. And then Yehuda went to go shear his sheep. Vayal al gozes eitzono. That's where he went. Tamar recognized what was going on, that she was just being pushed away. That's where she goes and sits on the prashas drachim, on the crossroads, and she gets Yehuda to do what Yehuda does. That's all when Yehuda is going to shear his sheep. From there comes
Mashiach.
Or, better yet, the line of David HaMelech comes from there. It seems to me that in Shevet Yehuda, in the tribe of Yehuda, it was a very special time when they sheared the sheep, because that was the time when the line of Peretz was created, because the king comes from Peretz. It came from there, because that's when Tamar and Yehuda were together. And so, within the lines of Yehuda, especially those who saw themselves as heirs of Peretz, who could become the king, or at least their line could become the king, shearing the sheep was a very special time, and they made a party. Nabal wasn't just celebrating the wealth of shearing the sheep. Nabal was celebrating his own ability to be coronated. And David comes at that time and asks for food. Nabal sees this as David's attempt to send a message to Nabal. It's not you, it's me. And Nabal reacts, says, get out of here. You? You Moabite? I'm not giving to you. This is a power struggle that's going on over here. David gets that word back, and David says, he's rebuffing me because he thinks that I have no right to claim the throne. I wasn't claiming the throne. That wasn't what I was trying to do. I was just trying to say we helped you out, help us out. But he reacted this way because he thinks that he has the right to the throne, and he thinks I have no legitimacy to the throne. That's nothing short of treason. That's rebellion. He has to be put to death. And they hold court and they decide that's the case. And they go to kill him. That's what's happening over here. Now, again, we still have some loose ends. We have not touched on, as I mentioned, why is it that David was ultimately wrong for wanting to kill him? In other words, he was right that he should be put to death, but Abigail stopped him correctly. What's the difference of opinion between Abigail and David, in which Abigail was right? And David will thank her for stopping him. What's that point? And then, ultimately, what happens with Hashem killing Nabal is very, very important to see how that happens. And then David marrying Abigail. These are all outstanding points. And I also have to share with you the lineage of Nabal coming from Kalev and show you how that fits in with some Gedalia. So we have at least one, probably two more shiurim on this parak.
You said that when David came to Nabal, he basically was just asking for food. He wasn't.
I think so. Yeah, because I think he was just coming to say, you know, we helped you, so
yeah.
Help us. I don't think David recognized Nabal's actions as a claim to the throne.
He didn't see it that way until he got rebuffed.
Yeah.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.